This podcast is brought to you by The Province.
The Province Sports Podcast.
Vancouver Canucks heading out on a six-game road trip. In fact, they've already headed out there in Montreal, getting ready for game number one of this six-game odyssey. Six games in nine nights. I'm tired just saying that. Fatigue's been an issue for this team already. Five-game losing. You know all of this. Botch is in Montreal. He's joining us on the phone here. Botch, how are you?
Hello, hello.
How are things in Montreal?
Things are fine. I mean, what can I say? I mean, I'm in Montreal, and, you know, I just hate when people ask, like, what's the city like you're in? Like, you know, people never care. I'm in Montreal. Mostly it sucks.
Do you speak any French?
I don't know, but you know who's really eloquent in French is Branson, man. Turns out his mom is from here. He went to French. He was in French school his whole life, and he is now one of the favorite Canucks. He arrives here. Before it was like all Burrows all the time. Now it's Gudbranson had the biggest scrum I've seen around Gudbranson in a long time.
Really? The things you learn. See, like Manny Malhotra used to surprise me as well that he spoke perfect French too. There was that time like when AV early on, it was AV and it was Luongo and it was Burrows and it was Mark Chouinard and like everybody, like the Sedins were the only guys that didn't speak French, I think.
Yeah, I remember we had like a French, like on a French beat. We had like a beat person that covered the team in French all the time, and we don't have that anymore in Vancouver, and the Canucks were back then a huge hit. Yeah, Luongo's, wherever Luongo is, he's going to be a monster hit in Montreal, and obviously Burrows still is and is going to be. But yeah, I mean, the Montreal media, man, they were all about the room today. They were pretty excited about how everyone was, and they told me that it was a great room, and guys were responding great, and they were all over this Roger Takahashi tweet, and they were grilling everyone. Like, that was something I had planned to just ignore, because I maybe would have thrown it in the provies, but with trepidation, because I know, sure enough, I'd be getting a call from Canucks. It's just the kind of thing that I'd be getting a call from the Canucks PR on. But I was willing to accept Takahashi's reasoning on Twitter that it wasn't about the Canucks. And I'm assuming you know what I'm talking about. Everyone knows what I'm talking about, right?
Well, I was going to say, back it up a sec, because I think most people that are, you know, hardcore on Twitter now know about it, but there might be some people that, you know, aren't as into Twitter as you and I and the rest of Canucks Nation. So let's back it up a little bit, because Roger Takahashi is the Canucks strength and conditioning coach, and on Twitter, it's somewhat cryptic. I mean, it wasn't directed at anybody in particular, but it was all about quit your complaining. What was the tweet?
Yeah, I don't have it online, but it was worse than quit your complaining, right? Like, I mean, it was like memo to players. You don't have it there. I wish you had it. It was pretty devastating, really. I mean, especially considering what we've just gone through to memo to players who are always complaining. Go a whole day without saying something negative. Your teammates will enjoy the silence. So, like, that's beyond, like, just don't be negative. That's saying, like, whomever he's talking about or referring to, that player only says things that are negative, because he's saying that if that player goes a whole day without saying something negative, the teammates will enjoy the silence. So you will not hear from that player whatsoever. Only you hear from them when they're negative, and if they were to go a day without being negative, it will be silence. So it was, call it what you want, man. It definitely does not fit in with his usual kind of, I would suggest, like, cheesy, typical motivational type tweets. It definitely sticks out. And man, the Montreal media was all over this. Like, everyone I ran into was like, what about this tweet? What about this tweet? They went to Jim Benning. Jim Benning had to talk about it. They went to all the players. All the players had to talk about it. Willie was asked about it. So no matter whether you think it was about the team or not, it turned in the end, it doesn't really matter, because it becomes another distraction. Like, the players were all asked, like, how negative are things in the room that someone's tweeting out something like this. Jim said that he had talked to Roger about it, and he was comfortable that it wasn't directed at the Canucks locker room. You know, and other people are going to believe that, and They should, I guess. I mean, that's the official word. That's what Rogers says. Like I said, I was willing to buy that. I was in. I was willing to ignore it. But I also see, you know, from the other point of view, like people are tweeting me about, like, well, what locker room is he talking about? Like, how much does he know about, like, the Islanders or, you know, some other locker room in the NHL? And I don't have an answer to that. It's definitely a weird one, and it's definitely become the story.
Well, the timing is fascinating to me because in the last week, you know, Jake Virtanen's fitness level has been called into question. Nikita Trampkin's fitness level has been an issue since the first day of training camp. There's questions about Anton Rodin and his rehab and his recovery and all those types. Like, is Roger feeling some heat in all of this?
I can't answer that. I would really hesitate to even speculate on that. But, you know, the timing is screwed up because, you know, the big one there to me is Virtanen because he was in Vancouver all summer. He was at the arena 5 days a week. I don't think it's a good look on anyone that he wasn't in shape or wasn't in the shape that they wanted him to be or needed him to be to start the season. I think that shows poorly on him. I think it shows poorly on everyone.
And again, I'm just surprised that this became an issue for the Montreal media. Like, they've got it that good, the Habs do right now. Like, there's just no issues around the Montreal Canadiens that anybody wants to talk about when you haven't lost in regulation 3 weeks into the season. It's all about what a trainer in Vancouver is saying.
Shocked. Like, the guy's like, I gotta talk to Benning about this. I was like, whoa, really? Like, we're really ratcheting it up that high? Of course, Jimmy, I mean, he'll answer any questions. So I said, yeah, I mean, go, he's right there. Go talk to him. Sure enough.
So Jim's at the rink. He's on this trip, although isn't this his usual trip where, like, he, you know, and maybe I haven't had the chance to talk to him, but, like, isn't this the trip where he packs, like, you know, everything he owns because he's going to every hockey rink there is in Eastern Canada?
Yeah, he definitely, when we get past the Ottawa game Wednesday, Thursday. So after that, yeah, he's got a big slate of games, OHL games. He's going to go see Mississauga. I think he's going to try to see Mississauga twice. He said that there was a lot of interest in that Mississauga team. So he's going to see that a couple times, and I think one other game. I think he's going to see maybe five or six games on the weekend altogether.
He is a scout, after all. Now, of course, his primary concern has to be what's going on with his hockey team that's lost five in a row. And what a screwed-up start to the season. Botched 4-0. I think we all knew that maybe that was too good to be true, but how quickly it can turn in the National Hockey League. Some injuries, a little bit of fatigue we heard about, and the fact that they started to see some better opponents. You know, they hung tough with Edmonton on Friday night, but even though they'll tell you they were close to Washington, if you look at that game, if you look at the numbers after that game, they were not in the same class as the Washington Capitals.
Oh my God! Well, the same. No, that game wasn't close at all. I mean, they've had tremendous goaltending. Like that, this is like both Miller and Markstrom have been like superb. I, you know, arguably to me, Miller's been their best player, and Markstrom's probably not that far behind if we're ranking where they all kind of have played so far to start this season. But J-Pat, like, I don't know, like, you think that was close, or, like, are you saying some people think it was,
No, on the score, the Canuck, no.
Stretches of that game where it looked like Team Canada against Belarus, like, I don't know what you saw, or what your friends saw, or what someone saw to say that was close, I guess in score, but that did not look close to me at all.
No, and that's what I'm saying, that the Canucks in the room yesterday before they traveled, and I was talking to a few of them, and they point to the scoreboard, and it's 3-2 going into the third period, and even Willie himself admitted that, you know, they weren't very good, but it's a one-goal game, you know, late in the third period, and that's why I say I think they're kind of fooling themselves a little bit if they think they were close to the Washington Capitals.
Yeah, I mean, they just, you know, that's the company line, like, they get those things in their heads, and they all, like, I guess the big company line today is about, like, every single guy that I asked about scoring brought up Berchi and said, like, how snake bit he is and how, like, close he is and you know, how many misses he's had. Like, basically, I would present the question, like, can the team score more? And then it was always, well, look at Berchi. He's barely missed all these chances. Once he gets going, we're going to score more. And that's, I mean, it's great in theory, and he has had a lot of great chances. But I think a year ago, we saw a guy with a lot of great chances, and they just went away. Like, it just ate him alive, and that was Rabada.
Well, I could not get over yesterday, and I know you were traveling yesterday, but in the room, we waited, and finally they brought Louis Erickson, a bunch of people that had requested Louis Erickson to come out, and he stood at the front of the room, and I guess the more time I spend around him, the more I'm finding out that you know, he's got the same sort of demeanor as the Twins, but my God, Butch, this guy, like, I wanted to hear something, anything that gave me an indication that, yes, he was a little pissed off that he hasn't scored. He's getting $6 million on the hook through 2023, $36 million, and just no big deal right now to him. And I frankly, I was a little surprised at that.
Well, I mean, that's kind of his MO, although that's not how, like, the Canucks, the coach, and I think the front office paying it, and even the Sedins I've talked to have kind of used this narrative with me that, like, he's feeling the intense pressure, and he's squeezing a stick, and he just wants to do so much for the team. But you're right, like, when you talk to him, you don't get that impression at all, and that may be... It may be a great trait of his. Like, I don't know. Like, it may be a trait where, like, nothing get. You know, he's always kind of even keel. Like, he's never too high. He's never too low. Whatever. He's been through this. He's been through the NHL early season wars and woes and slumps before, and he's gonna bust through any time, right? Well, the problem, and there's a couple problems here. One, they've already given up on him for now, anyway, on the first power play unit. That's how it's been for the past game, and that's how it was again today at the skate. So he's on a second unit, and today that second unit, and I'm not sure, totally sure, it seems like Tanev is going to play. I'm not 100% sure, but today the second unit was Tanev, Hutton, Horvat, Granlund, and Eriksson. Now, this is a guy that eats on the power play. He had 10 power play goals last year. He's always been a great power play goal scorer. You are not going to have a lot of opportunities with that unit. That's why I think he's got to stay on the first power play. No matter what happens, you just paid him all this money and you just gave him all these years. And I understand there is no choice at even strength. Like, you've got to pull the Hansen card. And there's a couple of reasons for that I can get into, both for Hansen and Eriksson. But on the power play, to me, you got to stick Eriksson there, because I don't think he has much chance at all in that second power play unit.
Well, he's got to get something going here. And again, if that's his defense mechanism, just to kind of play low key, I get it. But man, that's not what they paid him $6 million for. And he will score some goals. Like, it's not going to go forever, but it's just one of those things. You know, the longer it goes here right off the hop, my goodness, because all the talk in the offseason was, you know, everything, absolutely everything had to go perfect for the Vancouver Canucks. And, your $6 million man, your free agent acquisition, not scoring in the first 10 games of the season. That doesn't really fall under the heading of things going perfect.
What was the tenor of the questions? Like, who was asking them, and how long did it go?
Well, it was a big scrum, because he was the last guy. He had gone and showered and changed and stuff, and so we were all kind of waiting for him, and they had said, well, the coach will go when we're finished in the room here, and so, you know, he probably would have done himself some favors by going earlier with less media, but by then it was just, you know, it was kind of right in front of the TV, kind of where the goalies normally do their thing, and it was a big crowd. I mean, they weren't pointed questions. I think people were giving this guy an opportunity. It was a lot of the same questions about how much pressure are you feeling, but it was a really noticeable soft sell, I thought. And I don't know what I wanted to hear from him, but I guess I wanted to see some sign that, yeah, this guy gets it, that this team, like, look, they were going to be in some close games this year. They've already been in a bunch of them. One goal could go miles for this hockey team. And yet, you know, we haven't seen that one goal from him yet.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, as you're saying before, like, he is going to score, and, you know, people pointed out he's had slow starts before. All of that is fine and totally fair. And I believe in all of that, but I honestly do not right now believe that it's ever really going to work long-term 5-on-5 with him with the Sedins, because there's two reasons. One, he does, you know, we talked about before what Hansen brings and the speed and how he can create room. But two, Hansen with Sutter doesn't work at all. Like, that's been Death Valley for the past number of games, and I think it's kind of the underplayed part of all this that Hansen has been one of their biggest, most important even strength goal scorers, not just last year but for years. Like, he's been producing pretty significantly at evens for years, and it just, there's just nothing going on. Hasn't been anything going on since, like, the second or third game with him and Sutter. So I don't think Hansen Sutter's a fit. And that means that Eriksson would have to play with Sutter. Sutter's not a great playmaker. I don't know, man. I think that people that are at least a bit concerned about Eriksson are, and I know it's early, it's only 9 games in, and he's proven goal scorer and all of that, but he had 10 on the power play last year, and that was playing with Bergeron. I don't know. I just think that the people concerned of where this is going to end up this season have pretty good grounded reasons to be.
But, Botch, maybe the bigger question here, and I mean, 15 minutes in, we're talking about what's wrong with this team, and we haven't mentioned the Sedins. And I know it was a poll question on the radio this morning. Are they over the hill now? It's nine games in. They've got 9 points combined. Like, we're used to seeing them each have 9 points at the nine-game mark. They have 9 points combined right now. And, you know, if they're over the hill, then that's a huge concern. If they're not over the hill, the fact that, you know, Henrik leads this team with 5 points, that's a massive concern in and of itself. Regardless whether they're over the hill or not, they are still the best offensive players this Vancouver Canucks hockey team has and is likely to have for a while down the pipe. So, you know, who and what are Daniel Sedin to the Vancouver Canucks right now?
Wait, do you think that they're, I don't even know what over the hill means. Like, they're not first-line players anymore? Like, do you believe that that might be possible?
Yeah, I mean, but we've been talking about that forever. If you don't have anybody behind them, they're always going to be first-line players on the Vancouver Canucks. I mean, define first-line players.
This year, right now, like, are they, like, top, you know, if we're grading out all the 30 first lines in the league, do you think that they'll grade out in the top half?
I think that they look like 36-year-old guys in a league that is getting faster by the day. One thing that I've really noticed, especially the Edmonton game the other night, they've never been speed guys, but they've always been quick enough to break out and gain the blue line and then set up and do their thing. Yeah. And the Oilers were able to back check them and not let them get into the Edmonton zone. They were hounding them all the way back up ice because guys can now catch them on the back check, where even a couple of years ago, I think they had enough speed just to gain the line and then set up and get to work offensively. Look, that's their biggest bag of tricks. If that's taken away, then what?
Yeah, I honestly think that I think they'll be fine. I think that they are fine. I think that they've been super unlucky. I think, like, if Henrik just punches that puck into the open net, it's a different conversation a little bit. I think that the opportunities have been there. I don't like, I agree. I think that's why it's imperative to me that Hanson plays with them, because he does have the speed. He does create space. He gives them a different dynamic. He can retrieve pucks. I think that he plays really well with them. I think in a lot of last year, he actually made them better, especially when Henrik was hurt in the second half of last season. So, you know, I'd have to see it for a while with Yannick. I definitely did not like what I saw with Erickson, and you're right. I mean, there were problems, and you know, they were talking about it. I think after the other night, and Henrik was saying, you know what, we didn't play that bad. We actually had zone time. You know, when the Sedins are saying, like, actually having zone time is, like, one of the checks to show that they're playing better, I was pretty alarmed to hear him say that. I mean, that was always been one of the things that you can count on them for, zone time. And I do think it'll come around. I do think that they've been super unlucky, and I don't think they're over the hill. Like, I don't think that at all. I think they'll be fine. They're going to be a legitimate first line this year, and I think they'll get cooking with Yannick Hansen.
Look, all of this is a prelude to the topic everybody wants you to talk about, and that, of course, is your boy Stetch, and he's on this trip. But interesting, I noticed yesterday as they packed bags in that Canucks locker room, like, how many guys? 24 players on this trip. 23 of them had Vancouver Canuck hockey bags, and one had a Utica Comets bag. They haven't upgraded them to an NHL hockey bag yet, Botch. Does this mean that Troy Stetcher is destined for Utica once again?
Yeah, I think the same. Look, Stetcher's been outplaying the top eight for 2 months. He outplayed them in September, some of those guys. He outplayed him in October, came back to the NHL. He outplayed Larson, even the coach, even Willie said, and I today, like, yeah, look, like, Stetcher's been better than Larson at even strength. Larson's been a bit better than him at the power play. Like, the power play is 29th in the league. If Larson has been a bit better than Stetcher at the power play, who really, to be honest, hasn't gotten a lot of power play opportunities, and to me, when I saw him the other night, he's the guy that got the shots through, looks like he had a much better shot. I'd like to see what happens if those guys were given equal opportunities on the power play over the course of a couple of weeks. But I don't think it's going to happen. I think it's going to be inevitable what we all feared, the Troy soldiers feared, would come to pass once again. The Canucks do not want to lose Alex Piega. And as the story goes, last year, a couple of teams at certain points inquired about trading for Bieja. And so that has convinced the Canucks that there is no way they're going to be able to get him through waivers. To which I say a couple of things. One, if teams were looking to trade for Alex Bieja, why did you trade him? And two, there are Biejas that come around. Like, Makarov is, to me, an even guy to Bieja. Like, there are Biejas to be had out there on the waiver wire, etc. So I don't think it's the end of the world if you lose Alex Bieja. The Canucks are overcompensating after losing Corrado and seeing that you need 10, 12 defensemen over the course of a Vancouver season. They're not going to lose them. So, and they've pulled this switch before, and I think they're going to pull it again because I'm looking at it like Tanev's going to be back in the lineup, and I can see a team that's probably still going to be worried about losing Bieja because that's what they've been worried about for months. And so Stetcher will end up going back to Utica. And I talked to him about this today, and he kind of agrees. I think his skill set, I mean, he's a very smart player who has great recall. Again, something that you know, Willie talked about, his habits today. Like, even when things are going bad for him, he can rely on his habits, and he loves his habits. And so his habits are the instincts, the foundation of his defensive game. It's really good. And I think that players like that have an easier time playing in the NHL than they do in the more chaotic world of the AHL. So, to me, the AHL isn't really a spot for him, but it looks like that's the way it's going to go.
Very selfishly, I'm just glad that Bieg is still in the roster since I wrote about him on Sunday. That's all that really mattered.
I'm so sorry I didn't get a chance to read this. Did you call him Bulldog?
I did not. I fought the urge, I think.
Like, if you're writing a Philip Larson story, you have to mention how he walks the line. And if you're doing a Bieg story, you got to call him Bulldog.
But I
he left the rink today. I heard three people say, "See you later, Bulldog."
I fought the urge because I know that it's almost part of the formula when you write about him that you have to work the reference in, and so I kind of wanted to go counter to conventional wisdom there. So,
and speaking of nicknames, like, now that we know, and the Canucks have let it be known that Vertanen wasn't where they needed him to be in terms of fitness to start this year. Was Barkowski ahead of his time when he started calling him Big Country? Could we really? Is this the hockey version of Big Country?
Very well, maybe. That was one thing apparently that Matt Barkowski did do well for the Vancouver Canucks, was come up with nicknames for players. There's an issue that I have to address here with you, Botch, and this is pressing. It was brought to the attention by a loyal listener to the podcast here. It's my dad, who... I don't know what he gets out of it at this stage, but hey, he seems to like the podcast, so more power to him. But he's concerned, and this was a genuine concern that he came to me with last week after the last podcast, and he said, "I'm worried that Botch is going to leave the podcast because it's called the Patcast, and nowhere in the name, in the title, when it's tweeted out and there's the artwork, the graphics and stuff, there's no mention of Botch." And my dad is like, he's upset. He's worried that you're going to walk because it's not like the Pat and Botch podcast.
Can I just say, like, I'm so thrilled that it is, like, I could not be happier that it is called the Patcast. Like, I don't need or want my name, even if I were to do this with you every week for 10 years, I would never want my name in the title. Because when people are mad about the podcast, they have criticism of the podcast, what do? They go to you. They slip into your DMs. They tweet you. I'm totally left out of it. So even when I say something that's very upsetting to people, I don't even hear about it. They take their podcast issues right to the guy with his name on the billboard. So I totally appreciate that it is called the podcast. I enjoy, like, just being, like, the secondary guy. Here I am. I'll pop up. But if you have any critiques, any criticisms, you got to go with the guy whose name is at the top of the entire thing, and they always go to you.
I had to laugh because my dad looked serious. Just one problem, and I'm thinking, oh, wait, what's the one problem? And then he drops that on it. The Botch is going to walk on me.
Well... Yeah, I'm sure you could. I'm sure the podcast will survive, even if I were to move on.
All right. So from this one, we learned that Eric Goodbranson speaks pretty good French, or better than pretty good French. We found out that the French media there, the Montreal media, worked up about Roger Takahashi and his tweets. Yeah. And we found out that Jim Benning is, in fact, making the rounds on his annual scouting mission in and around the Canuck game. So, all right.
He loves the Mississauga team, so focus there.
All right, final one for you. And I hear about this all the time from, and I've never been to a game at the Bell Center, but I always hear about these hot dogs.
They're just hot dogs. It's just such, like, I hear that too, and I just get so pissed off when I hear people talking about the amazing hot dog. It's just a hot dog. You know, it really is.
You were going to say it.
There's nothing special about the hot dog. It doesn't melt in your mouth, and it's the most amazing hot dog. You got to try the hot dog. Like, and I'm sure people will say that. I'm sure it'll be a topic on 1040, and someone will invariably bring it up. You're right. It happens every time. And I don't give a shit what people are doing, like, you know, what they think of the hot dogs in a city, or what they're doing in a city, or what deli meats they're eating in Montreal. I don't care about any of that stuff. But you're right. It always comes up. And I'm here to tell everyone there's nothing special about Rogers Place in Edmonton. It's just a freaking hockey arena like every other hockey arena. And there's nothing, 100%, nothing to the hot dog thing in Montreal. They're just regular steamed hot dogs. Give me a break.
All right. We're going to leave it right there, Botch. Enjoy the hot dogs in Montreal. Enjoy the rest of the road trip. We'll catch up with you. You're back home after the Toronto game. So we'll get together. We'll do next week's PatCast together somewhere, some way, somehow. We'll get it done. Enjoy the rest of the road trip.
I will hit him with the hang.